We all tell ourselves stories of who we are and why. But we forget that we have the power to define them. That no idea grows from mewling striped cub to teeth at your throat tiger without a little help, some guidance, and a whole lot of love along the way. I'm Jared Cerf, and this is Here Be Tigers.
Is Xiphus the kind of god that needs shrines or temples?
Xiphus is the kind of god that co-opts other people's temples by desecrating them.
Wait, so Xiphus is a cuckoo bird?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, within the realm of gods. Yeah.
Yeah. Then what you have is the, I think you said Phrasmor, or a god of the dead, right?
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
A thing that is going to be immediately a factor in the encounter with the gambling skeletons is that they are inside a temple, and that temple is 100% rededicated to Xiphus. So that's a religion check to pick up on the fact that something's not right with these skeletons.
Right, and I think part of what belongs in this dungeon then are the elements of foreshadowing that either you or the experts you travel with might pick up on.
Right.
To go, oh, that was made by dwarven architects. Oh, that's a crab monster spore. That's, you know, that's not a Phrasma symbol.
Right. That was a Phrasman symbol, but it's desecrated now.
Right. You want to give them enough chances to make good choices or voluntarily make bad ones.
Oh, another thing that makes complete sense in this context are Lucrata for classic Dungeons & Dragons monsters.
Those are, I vaguely remember them, some kind of weird cougar thing.
They are the vile and vicious offspring of a demon lord and a monstrous species of hyenas.
Right.
What they are is basically horse-sized hyenas that can imitate people's voices.
You know, even if they're not undead, that sounds like the kind of pet cultist of Xiphus would have.
Exactly. And this sounds like the kind of place that they would hang out.
So importantly, if those things are able to get out into the wilderness too, and not just stay within, then what you have are those critters mimicking voices from the expedition.
Right. Now, the Lucrata traditionally hang out with gnolls, or gnolls, or however we're supposed to pronounce
it. Right, sure.
Okay. And there's no reason why they can't here.
You know, it's uninhabited by other civilizations. There's lots of swamp and woods. I'm sure you've probably got other populations in the outskirts.
Well, but of course the Lucrata won't give a dang about the gnolls and will kill them too.
Right. So maybe there were signs of old gnoll encampments that are largely empty and abandoned, but still critters they kept.
Exactly. There may be something related to
that. That's the thing
around.
Perhaps the druid could be warning you about. Hey, you know, we did actually... Would the old druids have partnered up with the gnolls to do this? And, you know,
probably not.
Okay. It's more that they moved in, things went bad or worse.
Right. The gnolls came by, they died. Lucrata stayed. Something like that.
Right. They met the centaur monster, killed them, left the animals alone.
Or, you know, they were able to outrun it or whatever.
Sure.
Another thing that a city that is flooded screams is lizard folk. I want to leave that alone for different reasons.
Yeah.
Mostly because they are actually too low level for the players to care about them.
Also, it's been done to death.
I'm not bothered by that.
I know. I mean, there's just because something is cliche doesn't mean it can't be done well. It's a matter of doing it well.
Right. It's an execution problem at that point.
Sure. But I feel like it's too many ingredients in the soup at that point with everything else you have here.
So plausibly, as a lead into Adventure 3, ogres make sense. Another thing I'll bring up. Yeah. Because if in Adventure 3 you're going into the mountains, you're going to run into giants, so you might as well run into introduction to giants.
Adventure 3 was where we had the Frost Giant sauna.
Eventually, you may end up with the Frost Giants in Adventure 3.
Right. If you go that direction, so the ogres are elsewhere, they might even...
So if you meet some ogres now, and there's supposed to be ogres in this part of Tal'Dorei, canonically. So, you know, that's the thing. And ogres, everybody understands what ogres are, more or less.
Yep. Big, ugly, angry.
Right. Which is, again, another objective we have. We're trying not to write something that is so Galarian-specific that you can't use it somewhere else.
Right, and it's not even to say that anything depicted as the baseline stereotype you can't tweak or adjust to suit the interest of the players.
Ultimately, that's up to you and your table. But still, I want to make it fairly easy.
Right. When I ran the Dungeon World game for Dave, Pablo, and Steven for 3 years, that game is well situated to cinematic combat. It's one of the staples of the engine that was designed by the team. Cobalt Press, took me a moment to remember it. The reality is that when our group met it, they were far more interested in dialogue and exploration with occasional horrifying punctuated combat that reminded them why they didn't fight. But, you know, and I think part of the reason I brought you into that game was to let them know there are times where talking isn't going to solve things. And you nearly killed all of them.
Don't worry, I helped.
You did. It was a great eye-opener for them.
Right. Occasionally you meet some kind of maniacal vulture guy who just wants to light everything on fire. It's fine.
He's immortal because he sacrificed everyone else to stay that way. There's nothing wrong here.
I don't know about nothing wrong.
You know,
I'm looking through the bestiary and other things. Awidzotl makes sense, which is probably that's pronounced something closer to Awidzotl.
Sure.
Anyway.
Bird people.
No, these are an Aztec monster that's basically a badger with a hand for a tail. They're creepy.
That's got to be in the city.
Just because it's real weird, right?
I think that's the kind of thing. You don't run across the evil centaur monster. You just see a weird club-handed badger monster and go, okay, out of the city.
Okay, we don't need to be here anymore. They also imitate voices. There's going to be a lot of imitating of voices here.
Oh, I think part of the fun there is there's not much undead. There aren't many undead outside of the cemetery, but there's a lot of stuff that gives a feeling of hauntedness to the location.
Right. No, that's sort of a goal here. We're like, okay, literally this place is not full of ghosts, but it's full of very unpleasant things that you don't want to hang out with.
Right. So the claustrophobia there is in part, what horror do they want to face?
Yep. And there's lots of plant monsters. There's all sorts of plant monsters, and plant monsters can go pretty much anywhere, as you know.
Sure. It's the kind of thing where depending on, and here's a great one. If certain parts of the dungeon become more flooded, if there are plant monsters that can only be in the flooded waters, they're there too now.
Yeah, I don't really want to oblige people to deal with trying to swim, but I don't want to rule that out.
If you create opportunities for players to get around things that they don't want to deal with, they will take them.
Right. Oh, here's another guy.
Or to put it another way, if you create random rooms full of pillars and lava snakes.
Right. Hypothetically speaking.
The players will close the door.
Yeah. Okay, so here's another thing. There's another kind of not particularly friendly fey creature called a Calduin, which is a cursed fisherman.
I feel like that's in the swamp area around it.
Yeah, no, there might just be one around where basically they can hook you like a fish and then they can carry you away and then they will try to eat you.
What was that? Similar to the Vodunoi, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit. I don't think there's any special reason to be looking at like demons or devils here. They seem not thematic.
I think you're looking at largely undead or the kind of fae that don't like anything else being here.
Right. And I think that plays well with the druid, with the oops, this was the druid's fault theme.
Right. They made this friendly to the fae who decided it shouldn't be for anyone else.
Yeah, that's fine. We'll take this.
The undead were like, great, we're underground. You have that. We'll have this.
And I kind of want to surprise everybody, really, by downplaying undead in this situation. Skeletons and grave guards notwithstanding.
I don't think they encounter any undead until they're in already.
Well, so the main thing is that writing undead is a little monotonous, and especially in the context of Pathfinder, it leads to some pretty obvious and straightforward choices.
What, you don't want to voice a whole bunch of, oh.
It's not even that. Like, I don't want everybody to have to take disrupt undead.
It's boring gameplay.
Right. It's just not interesting.
And so, even if that's not how the mechanics work in the game you end up playing this in,
right.
It's certain challenges tend to push toward certain solutions in players' minds.
Right. And so if mostly it's elementals and plants in the abandoned graveyard, in a way, that's fine.
I think effectively what you're looking at here is a push-pull between weird, invasive, otherworldly life and slightly deranged, very bored undead.
Yep.
Who want to interact with people, but know eventually they have to kill whoever comes
right. in. Right, but they have to kill you, because if they don't, I mean...
So really, the push-pull of them becomes, how much fun can they have with you before they get around to deciding it's time to kill you?
And I think what they're basically going to do is put you up into wandering into, like, problems.
Right, which could include the Chol, other Fae, just whatever comes in the way. And, you know, they might do stupid riddles and other bullshit.
Yeah, sure, if you're that kind of DM. I'm not.
Riddles and puzzles are hard because I mean, you remember the weight puzzle in the bar temple Dave threw at us, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had this whole set of scales, or he has a scale where there were weights that you could measure that it was the weight and the tonality you had to balance. But the scale was also broken, so you couldn't get it perfect. It's almost enough.
Didn't I try to chop down the door?
Yeah. You chopped down the door and we broke the scale. We just took the whole thing over.
Nah, we're done with this. I destroy it.
Yeah.
That was my solution to that puzzle.
And he gracefully went, okay, door open.
Right.
Yeah.
I felt a little bad about that one.
I don't anymore because you and I have both played too many games where it's guess the exact sequence the designer had in mind.
I don't feel that bad. I felt a little bad about that one.
Right. I feel like inevitably, regardless of whatever plans exist, they will not continue to function when the players arrive the way they were supposed to.
Yeah, basically nothing survives contact with players. And if you don't know that already, take our word for it. We're serious.
Honestly, it should be part of the fun to see what happens at that point.
Right. You can write a great adventure and your players will do something dumb. At about like the 60% point. And then what are you going to do?
They put the hat on right after winning the duel.
They will find the cursed hat and be like, I put that on.
It's magical and shiny. I wear it.
And then they will roll a one on their saving throw.
Uh-huh.
And now, suddenly, it's not even the fighter who put it on. It's the wizard.
Yeah, which actually kind of makes it better.
In a way, but also worse in another way.
Battle before me, minions.
It's just what's going to happen, and that's fine. Not every time, but every once in a while, it really is.
I think that tentative play to find out what happens, regardless of what system you're in, should be something you hold to, because if you're trying to run to what is written, you might as well just buy the rest of your players a video game or a $200 board game that each of you need a box for.
You're just mad about this $200 board game concept, huh?
Because it's going to work.
Yeah.
You and I both know this.
I do know. I own $200 board games.
Our group only needs to spend $1,000 to invest in this spiritual card.
I haven't inflicted them on you guys. I have other friends for that, but I do own them.
But were any of them conflictless spiritual journeys, Ken?
No. No.
Okay.
Pretty much their conflict with penis monsters, actually, is one of them. And
sorry, what game is this?
Kingdom Death.
Okay.
I'm not even making that part up. I don't own the Penis Monster expansion. Let me be clear, the Penis Monster is an expansion for Kingdom Death.
I joke about this, but I know Pablo and I got invited by Dave at one point to play a board game that was about time travel in a magical high school in a Japanese horror anime setting.
I mean, that sounds fantastic. Why did you not take him up on that?
We did. We played 4 or 5 rounds and lost terribly on it. I still don't remember how the game works. Which is kind of fitting for the genre.
I may have one coming soon where the space station is crashing and everybody has to try to get whatever it was they needed to do on the space station done before the space station crashes.
I will admit, I'm occasionally fond of starting the beginning of the adventure of the session on the disaster or the, oh crap, in media res. Yeah.
That can be very fun because it cuts directly to, okay, we're doing this.
When I was playtesting 5e or the earliest versions of D&D before they, became what it is now, mm-hmm. They had a whole bunch of rules and packets and everything. I said, fuck it, your ship's crashing.
Right.
Just roll.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about encounter design.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A thing that is true is that some encounters only make sense in a particular context. So for example, when I drew my map, I put the scythe tree next to the flooded part of the graveyard.
Right. So you can get stuck in the mud, drown, or get chopped up.
Or it can throw you into the mud, or the mud men can come out of the mud and attack you while the scythe tree is fighting you, or whatever.
Right. This is less about combat synergy and more the way awful things live together.
Well, yes, but also, coming from running a lot of 4th edition D&D,
mm-hmm.
a game in which encounter design was basically key to making it be any fun.
Right, or miserable, depending upon choices made.
If you stuffed it, it was a problem. But, if there was a fun encounter going on.
I'm not even talking about stuffed it. We had a game where maybe we were, a level 30 game?
Right, where you're just there for 2 hours trying to resolve nonsense.
No, man, this was a 4.5-hour bottle. I'm not thinking of that one. But the one I brought up was, it was undead. Mm-hmm. And there were two kinds. One kind killed your ability to heal. The other kind killed your ability to damage. And then there was a third monster that killed your action economy.
Okay, so, yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah. So you didn't heal. They healed. You couldn't harm them enough. You wasted your turns healing. It was just a very slow death spiral of this.
Right. And that's doing it wrong. Whereas if you designed a bunch of cool stuff that were like hazards that people who could knock people into things could knock people into, if you gave people places to hide and choices to make.
You can still set the mudmen on fire. You can still chop the tree down.
You could grab the anchor and jump onto the lizardmen's raft and sink the raft.
Sure. You could crash two airships together and come out unscathed.
Lots of good ideas. You could decide that the skeleton with the bat in the pie was basically just a big enough problem that you'd get down to the bottom of the stairs immediately. You had choices.
Right. The point is, there should never feel like there's only one solution in the moment.
Or you could go, I'm fighting that guy, and the wizard can cloud kill the rest of the room, for another example from our experience.
And then get kicked into it.
Yeah, it was a problem. But on paper, it was a good plan.
He earned that shenanigans after the number of times he pulled it before, though. But that aside, you always want to set encounters up so that there's never just the one solution and there's never just the one escape.
Right. Well, also, and just, you know, on a very, very basic level, fighting an orc in a 10x10 room is boring.
You win.
Well, yeah, but also it's just not interesting because no...
Well, I'm saying you win because the encounter is over. There's no point running it.
Right. You're going to kill the orc, or the orc is going to turn out to be, like, secretly a badass, and he's going to kill you. And those are really the only two incarnations, you know, only two results.
I am free from my own form. Yeah. You know, you have to look at them more as, puzzle's the wrong word, more as an invitation for the players to do shenanigans.
But not all of them.
No. Some of them should be straightforward challenges of get past this, get through it, or run.
Right. So I love your idea that the skeletons, having escaped from the players, are going to flood the arena while you fight their boss. I think that's
great. They don't breathe. They, you know, it's the kind of thing dicky skeletons
do. The boss doesn't care. So screw you guys. Have some water. Makes perfect sense. I like the idea that the scythe tree is growing next to the flooded part of the graveyard so it can throw you in the water.
Right, and maybe the mudmen drown you instead and then eat the flesh.
Or the mudmen can drag you into the water after the scythe tree drags you up, or whatever.
Right.
I think that's great. I like the idea on a different level, right, that the filth fire, which was just like a profoundly evocative name to begin with.
What's this?
A filth fire is a kind of fire elemental.
That's dirty?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Is in the crematorium.
As the crematorium, or maybe a corrupted version of it.
Right. It is the crematorium, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So that gives you an opportunity to fight it, to purify it,
or
to seal it.
Don't go in there.
Yeah. You go, oh, that's a dirty fire elemental. Bye.
Whoop. We're out of here.
Or you flood it, you know, and problem solved.
Right. And now, well, that probably didn't work out so good for it, did it?
Right. You might have awakened the chill in the meantime, but say, Livy, you know fire elemental anymore.
Right. Fire elemental solved.
Right. Really, the goal here is to work the funnels, work the levees properly so that you release the chul on the boss.
I feel like you're overthinking this.
I'm just thinking of things players will want to do.
I'm supposed to be the one who's excited about the prospect of Crabmen. I feel like you're overthinking this.
Unless just you and I have known players for a long time. We know the dumb things they try.
I mean, I'm not arguing with that. Okay. That's not a defensible position.
No.
Okay. I actually feel like most people don't automatically reach for a ridiculous solution to the problems.
I was explaining this to, I think, because Ani and Andrew and I were playing, it's a session of our game for the show while Dave is, you know, handling the move. And we were talking about how typically in the other games, they don't play terrible characters because it's a hard thing to play in most groups.
Yeah. I have tried to explain to people that if you tell me we are the bad guys, I am going to just like clear whatever bar you set for bad guy.
Okay, then.
Before.
Yeah.
I'm going to be awful. But if you tell me we're the good guys, I'm not going to do that.
No, you might be irascible and try to creatively problem solve through interesting means, but.
Right. I made a genuinely nice psychic guy for Cubicle Dexter Stars Without Number game.
Sure.
Like, he was a good guy who had been through some terrible stuff. He was very loosely inspired by Brooke from One Piece's background.
Okay.
Where, holy crap, no wonder he wants to join the crew. Everything's been terrible till now.
So I think really when you design these puzzles, there could be ways, at least for, you know, the things that are conversable with, to negotiate some of it away or lessen the hazard in a fashion.
Right. My major gripe with running Abomination Vaults has been that many of the encounters are, you open a door, you're fighting a thing.
It reminds me sometimes less of the old fashioned, I move and, you know, have a pole ready to poke everything for 10 minutes. Thankfully, they've worked the mechanics on that into more favorable and less boring. But yeah, it's, I think part of what causes the hesitancy in our group is the, okay, what are we fighting with this door?
Well, yeah, no, you missed on Sunday when you weren't there. Uh-huh. They went into a room with another one of these horrible dioramas, but on the library floor.
Okay.
And as it turned out, there was a wood golem in there.
Shock. I'm completely and utterly just, I don't know. I have no words for why there wouldn't be a horrifying monster in
right.
the library.
But the first thing they told me was, we go check out the books, which meant that the wood golem got to surprise them.
Did they know it was there?
No.
Okay.
No, like literally they opened the door and I said, there are some books and a diorama in there. And before I was even done with the sentence, I got told, we go look at the books.
Skip cutscene. Press
so
X.
I just rolled with it. Okay. The result was that Tony the Ranger got punched in the jaw by a wood golem and nearly died.
But I mean, that's those moments of actor player choice where you could give them the clues. They say, we don't want context clues. And you go, okay.
Fine. You're in a hurry to look at the books. You do that. There is a problem.
It's in the Apocalypse World systems, it's usually called the golden opportunity. It's when you don't have to look at the rules anymore. You go, okay, this happens.
Right. But also, mm-hmm. that wood golem stays in that room.
Right. So either you get rid of it or you don't go in the room.
Exactly. And that's not that exciting a decision-making tree. I'm okay with it from a structure of the game. You need to kill the thing to get the experience.
Right, but it'd be more interesting if the wood golem was just hostile to certain things or hostile only to if you touch them. Like, if there were resolution mechanics that could get it out of there without you fighting it, or you could
right.
go...
Right, or if you had an answer to the wood golem that didn't involve having to set it on fire from outside the room, which is going to be you guys' answer to it, I already know.
Thus, destroy all the books inside. I was thinking about that as we were talking.
I literally had to tell everybody before we left on Sunday that if you throw the necklace of fireballs into the room with the wood golem, there aren't going to be books in there anymore.
Really?
Yeah. They knew. No one was surprised by that information. But I felt, in the interest of being a fair dungeon master, that I should tell everybody that if you start throwing fireballs into a room, the books won't survive.
I suppose, and this gets back to the conversation, since one of our objectives in that game was to acquire books for the wizard who pays for them, part of what directs the behavior within this environment is what you're asked to look for, find, or retrieve beyond just the helmet.
Right. So we know the goal here is to get the armor.
Right. But this is also a fairly unexplored, successfully in a way, environment that has old lore and history to
right.
it.
So I think... Okay, one good idea that we've had and kind of left alone for the past several minutes is the idea that the Nuklevi is killing adventurers and hiding their stuff somewhere.
Sure.
I don't think that's what's happening. I think the Nuklevi is killing adventurers and the skeletons are taking their stuff.
So populated throughout. And this makes it even more fun. You leave it as just treasure to be a reward if they get through the trap. So
right.
it's a bait first, right?
Yep.
Then you see the skeletons taunting them with the stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Then maybe they'll offer, hey, you win the board game, I'll give you this shiny little bauble, right?
Well, and they're probably also redistributing it to the creatures in the ruins that would use it.
Yes. So part of it becomes a question of, can I get it off the thing and get the treasure? Can I bargain or gamble or do some type of shenanigans to get it off the skeleton without killing the skeleton?
So maybe the first skeleton gambit, as it were, is going, oh yeah, the Nuklevi killed a bunch of adventurers over there.
Mm-hmm.
And not mentioning that, yes, that is what happened. And then we gave all of the adventurers' weaponry to a bunch of whites.
The other D&D 5e beta I ran way back in the day was for mining an oil town that was infested with goblins in the mountain. And the dwarves were, you know, begging adventurers, quote unquote, to come in and solve that. But the dwarves were also, in terms of, you know, in classic, you know, gold rush fashion, selling you all the equipment to do it. What you didn't find out till later was the dwarves were dedicants of Abathor, and the goblins were giving them at a cut rate the adventurer's gear, and they were just recycling this.
Oh, Lord. That's horrible.
The best part was there was a magic treasure called the Scales of Abathor.
Right.
Right. Which I left there as a big foreshadowing, because Abathor is the dwarven god of greed in the setting we were playing, I think Forgotten Realms.
Yep.
And it told you, it gave you the measure of your soul if you put it on.
Right. Yeah. So I think the idea that the skeletons are deliberately baiting people into problems is very fertile. I think the idea that this necromancer has his own deal is important. I think the idea that the skeletons have a leader is important.
Right. I think, for instance, the necromancer might want you to, you know, make an offer to the cleric for an exchange of ideas. Actually, I could see the necromancer saying, you know what, could you just deliver my correspondence to the Xyphus cleric?
I also think there's probably three levels. Surface, catacombs, deep catacombs. And getting to the deep catacombs is basically the end.
Mm-hmm. If you get there and you succeed, you won the adventure this time.
Right, exactly. What that means is that probably in the deep catacombs is where we start to see underdark creatures.
Right. That's the stuff that has crept in or made its way in since.
Right. And so long as it doesn't bother the centurion, not worried about it.
You know what might be terrible? So you deliver, just as a premise, you find where the cleric Xyphus is, and he's in some part of the third area, and he's sitting there negotiating with the underdwarves, wherever you end up calling them.
I think the cleric is effectively the boss of the regular catacombs.
Okay, but maybe it's not him, but someone else commissioning an expansion.
No, I think that's exactly who commissions the expansion. He's got these skeletons.
Right.
But these skeletons are like thousands of years dead soldiers with no skills.
Right, and no ambitions.
They're not that helpful. The skeletons are honestly kind of assholes. As followers, they're disappointing, okay?
They're really good at being a problem to everyone.
Right, so the cleric has brought in outside hires.
Yeah.
Dwarves, probably. And yes, I think they probably are evil dwarves. And as you know, there are two flavors of evil dwarves.
Hey.
Dwergar and Darrow. I think they're Darrow, because that's just worse.
Yes. They're the ones that, you know, Dwergar are the ones that are supposed to turn invisible or something.
No, Darrow are the ones who all have spell-like abilities and weird nonsense. And Dwergar are basically just evil dwarves.
Right. They're the evil dwarves so that we can stop being as racist about the good ones, quote unquote.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Dwergar are just, you know, not nice guys.
No, sure.
They're just bad, basically. Now, admittedly, Dwergar are probably the correct guys to hire if you're trying to succeed at your goal of making your dungeon more deadly, in that Darrow are crazy. But, you know,
I don't think the cleric of Xyphus is all his marbles, or their marbles anymore.
It is understood that clerics of Xyphus probably don't. Okay, this is the difference between chaotic evil and lawful evil. Darrow are chaotic evil. And they do things like get high on subterranean musk fungus to gain spellcasting.
You know, I'm now seeing a part where if you manage to get down to the cleric of Xyphus to deliver the necromancer's correspondence, he's sitting there yelling at a bunch of mushroom stone dwarves.
Right. Whereas Dwergar are, you know, very organized, and they throw bombs at people, and they worship Droskar, who is the god of being a bummer, basically. And,
I don't think they'd have anything to do with the city. It's already a mess.
It seems like not the place for them, right?
It's got evil fey and lazy undead.
Right.
And,
whereas Darrow wandering in there, I mean, that makes perfect sense. They're crazy sons of bitches.
You're not going to throw Morlocks in there too just to fill it out?
All of these things are too low level to be plausible except in large numbers. Whereas a bunch of Darrow working for the guy who's trying to make the place even worse makes perfect sense.
Right, maybe he's trying to connect it to underparts of the city and turn it into a whole empire of awfulness.
I gotta be honest, I think what he's trying to do is expand and renovate the catacombs, but also put a lot of death traps in there.
You know, the worst part would be if, in a way, he's kind of like the old elite of Rome, where he wants to have his palatial mansion is just an underground death horror.
I think this guy actually probably would hire Darrow over Dwergar, because the possibility of the Darrow screwing up and killing themselves is way higher.
And that still fulfills the purpose.
And that works for Xyphus. Exactly. Yes. I think this is like deliberately just the worst constructed dungeon.
So there are layers of just being awful and incompetent.
Right. I think this dude almost has to be in a position to safely exit the dungeon whenever he wants.
You know, two of my favorite things from the latest patch in Honkai Star Rail
right.
are that the middle management robots have clip-on ties.
Yes, I think that's brilliant.
And also that they steal their employees' performance points.
That also is brilliant, but in a different way.
I feel like this guy is on that same level.
I think this guy is like, you know what? I don't have to stay here forever. I found these cool skeletons. If I get the skeletons set up, they'll probably handle things here, right?
Right.
This is the work of probably years for this guy. But he's about done when the players arrive.
Okay, then you know what happens here. If you interrupt the villain shortly before they accomplish their evil goal.
Right.
There's a monologue.
There's probably not just a monologue, but also this dude is mad now.
Yeah. So there are consequences.
Right. Like, if you screw up enough things, if you kill the skeletons, for example.
Yeah.
This dude is going to lose his temper.
And come after you. Or send things after you. Or, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's going to be rough.
So I think, like, there's a path where, you know, you deliver or you interact as little as you can with the crazy priest of Xiphos. Get what you need and leave.
I think there's no way out of this place without killing him. I mean that seriously. Just none.
Well, because I think fundamentally, if you succeed in escaping, he's failed.
Correct. And that's why you can't leave without killing him. Or at least running him out of the place.
So really, there are three roving hazards. You've got the
Troll, which just hates you. You've got the Nuklevi, which is indifferent to you, but will kill you if it runs into you.
And you've got the priest who insists you die to ensure that their faith is fulfilled.
Right, who is 100% determined that everybody who comes to these ruins should die horribly and pointlessly.
Like, I could even see, for instance, maybe they get to the point where they have the duel, you win the duel, you did everything the way you're supposed to according to the lawful skull, and so here's your hat. And then the priest of Xiphos is sitting there in their little observation deck going,
this is not going to work for me. What the heck?
Thumbs down the emperor. And that could be, for instance, if they haven't flooded the arena yet, that would be when they do. Thumbs down, arena goes whoosh.
You fools. How dare you desecrate the resting place of this warrior?
Right, because still camp it up pretending to be like a dedicant of the Legion and all that.
I actually don't even think it's a priest of Xiphos.
Just a dedicant? A warlock, maybe?
I think it might be another bard, God help us.
You know what? That would be great if it was another adventurer.
It's just an evil bard.
Yeah. Because then you know what the whole adventure is. You're fighting an evil bard for their hat.
Well, apart from that, which has its own value, right? What this means is that eventually, okay, if this evil bard has left bard things throughout the place, your mentor from the first adventure can be like, wait, I know who this is. That guy disappeared 5 years ago.
Yeah, you know. That would be great if at one point in the beginning of the adventure, they're supposed to consult one of the experts or get into their archives and it's not inaccessible because they're just not here.
Guy's just not there.
Yep.
Right. We're going to go talk to, Chucklehead McPhilistine, and he's not around.
Expert on the undead.
Right. He's another historian. He was my mentor. That's it. Yes.
Oh, now we're absolute Pulp Fiction.
Right. Or possibly he's another historian. He was my rival when we were at Tal'Darur Free Medical College or whatever.
Those are everywhere.
Android Free Medical College is a running joke in our campaign because that's where Dr. Click-Clack went.
Is he a goblin bard then?
I mean, if he's a goblin bard, it's not even like interesting that he's decided to worship Xiphos. It just makes sense.
I think it shouldn't be that obvious. Maybe a little less.
No, I think he should also be, you know, human or whatever, and just like have given in to Xiphos at some point due to something.
You know what it is? The only originality left is banal death through surprise.
I have concluded that drama is basically fundamentally bankrupt and anticlimax is the only true ending to anything.
Yes.
Oh, that's horrible. But also weirdly plausible.
You think that's bad? We're doing a modern AU, and so we joke that there's an Underdark into the modern city we're in.
Right.
Only the gnomes are only allowed to live there. They were exiled from the Fae for one reason. They served as they became too vociferous as critics for the Fae narratives. They were just the actually guys to every bullshit.
They wouldn't lay off, so we threw them out.
So all they would do.
Okay, so if this guy hypothetically is a vanished former adventurer, right?
Uh huh.
Here are some questions that make sense. Did the Nuklevi kill the rest of this guy's party? I think yes.
That was when he had his enlightenment.
At which point, right, exactly. He experienced the revelation of Xiphos, which is bad for everybody, of course. Okay. And I think this is actually a nice, tight narrative, right? Years ago, this guy who your boss knows about vanished in these ruins. Mm-hmm. And that's why he didn't want you to go there. But now the Baron insists.
And he has all of his mentors' or rivals' records, at least some of them.
He has some of that guy's notes, right, that he purchased, you know, or salvaged from whatever, right? Doesn't really matter.
Yeah, found off a dead apprentice.
Right. And so he says, look, they found the city. I know they did that much because they told me so.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I guess we need to go there or something like that. And oops, it turns out that now this guy is super evil and has, you know, lost it and is deliberately trying to build the city into a death trap.
The whole city, slowly.
The whole place. Yes. No, exactly. His idea is that this should become a city of despair.
Well, even better. Eventually, he wants to lure as many adventurers to their doom as possible to prove to them they should stop.
Not eventually. He's already started. You're among the first, but you're not the only ones. This guy has showed up in this already terrible place and been like, what if it was worse? Wouldn't that be great?
Does he still have an instrument and croon out terrible tunes?
I don't know that bards are actually required to have an instrument in Pathfinder.
Okay.
Which isn't no.
I think, you know, 5e was a muse of some kind you're supposed to have.
Yeah, no. In Pathfinder, your deal is that your bard has to have a lore they are responsible to or something. Sure. I'm looking. Hold on.
Right. So his lore obviously is misery.
No. But also kind of yes. Okay. No, it's a muse. The name of it is Muse. Okay.
Okay, I was right.
You have to have a muse. Okay. And you can infuse your performances with magic to create unique spells called compositions.
Oh, God.
Okay. Compositions require you to use the performance skill while casting them, and they are focus spells. So the only thing you need to do bard music for is focus spells. And I think this guy was clearly an Enigma Muse bard who just like, oops.
Riddles and puzzles and solutions.
Right.
Which means his actual monologue at you is the ritual.
Right. There is no solution. That's what I've discovered, etc.
Yes, he goes into the whole thing, and only partway through maybe do you realize he's enchanting you into the attack.
And also has just totally lost it.
Completely gone.
Yeah. So all the bard focus spells require performance checks, is kind of the bottom line here.
Yeah, you know, there's no way he's not monologuing.
Right, and that leads to this guy knowing things like Dirge of Doom. Because, yeah, he does. Right. Yeah. This is where we deploy the extremely depressing bard.
Which is a character you love using.
It's funny to me. This guy's whole deal is being a complete bummer.
Life is suffering. Existence is futile.
No, this guy's gotten a religious revelation about it. It's great. Sure. It's going to be fun.
It will be glorious.
Yeah. Right. I think that works. I think he's actually not the only survivor from his adventuring party. One of them made it back to civilization or some nonsense and is gone with the expedition. So now you've got revenge for this dude.
Okay, is the survivor sane?
Probably mostly.
Okay.
I don't think they need to be crazy. I'm not really sure the theme here is craziness. The theme here is basically that history is a curse. Like, that's kind of the overarching theme of this adventure path. As it turns out, knowing your history is sometimes a real bummer.
What you're saying, Ken, is that this tea is bitter, so is life. You should forget your past.
I'm not saying that. Someone else might react to what I am saying with that.
Right. Your motherly figure and mind-altering methods through your brain might continue to tell you that through your imaginations of people you know.
Well, so like, basically, this is sort of the right-wing nightmare, right? We teach white kids about American history and they feel bad about American history. Same principle.
Except it kills you.
Except also the history might be trying to murder you because it's a skeleton. Yeah.
You saw that screenshot I took of them. They're interviewing the guy about the questions asked for the speaker, right?
Yeah.
Geological sign.
Geological sign. Good Lord.
You know, he confirmed it. They are actual, you know, bones just in flesh bags. Maneuvering through the halls of liberty.
Yeah, that's just, no. No, not okay. All right, so, not bad. I can still use some more encounter ideas if you think of them, but we don't need to do it right now. I think I can go ahead and start drawing the basement.
We've made progress on this, and it is, I'm starting to see more depth to it.
Right. No, there's an overarching theme for the whole adventure path, definitely, of like, actually a lot of bad stuff happened in history. What you going to do about it?
And we should leave it where it is.
We could leave it alone. We could walk away from it. We could try to do something about it. We have choices, but that's the theme here. Tal'Dorei is literally the oldest kingdom on this continent. Literally.
Right. Okay. Which just means its history is going to be as messy as possible.
Which means that its history is going to be full of bummers. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the theme here. Okay. Yes. Admittedly, history was not great.
Maybe we should stop trying to recreate parts of it.
Right. Perhaps you should not wear the armor of your horrible ancestor, become possessed by it, and try to take over the country. This is a bad idea.
Like, it's even possible, because I think at some point they had some of his original journals and stuff, but not all of them.
Right.
You know?
I think the guy looks as if he was, like, genuinely motivated to help Tal'Dorei and expand the country northward and this, that, and the other.
Right, and then eventually realized he was the best means to do so.
Well, and then he decided that obviously he was the one who understood properly why this was imperative, and, you know, okay, cool. Right.
I'm the only one, yeah.
Right, and I think ultimately the arc is that the Grave Knight takes over somebody and looks at the modern history of Tal'Dorei and goes, this is a bunch of bullshit. I know what made Tal'Dorei great. Let's go kill a bunch of people and take stuff over.
Yes. Let's undo everything that happened to us the way it used to be.
Right. Let's just go back to that.
So you're just making a fantasy civil war kernel?
It's not even a civil war kernel particularly, but it's not that. All right.
Yeah.
Like, in the context of American history, I don't even think that that's the right reference point. I think it's everything that was going on before the Civil War, primarily directed at Native Americans.
Yeah, I could see that. That's true, because of the... No, we'd already done the Trail of Tears at that point, right?
Well, that's... But the Trail of Tears is the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's why it came to mind, right. Because it's the... We're going to put civilization in place of what was your, right, quote-unquote.
This guy is not literally somebody who would have done that, but it's somebody who would have looked at that and been like, yeah, okay, I can see why you needed to do that.
It would have been an inevitability if he had had enough time and mentality.
Like, the story of the Tal'Dan Wars of Expansion is basically Tal'Dorei trying to expand throughout the entire continent that most of the Pathfinder setting is assumed to be played on most of the time.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Like, if you look at the map of Galarian that they give you in the book for Pathfinder, right? Mm-hmm. Literally half of what's on that map was part of Tal'Dorei at some point.
And I think that's part of why this can only go so far, because once you tease out the threads of this set of arcs far enough, thoroughly enough, you have so many other things that might connect to elsewhere in the world.
The logical, super high-level conclusion of this story involves time travel, and I just don't want to write that.
That just turns into a game of actually.
Right. And it's not that interesting, and I'm bummed by that. You stop this guy from the past from causing a problem now. Good job. Well done.
My friend and roommate in college, Bill, he tried writing a time travel screenplay at one point. And he, I remember, ended up consulting the philosophy club and guild in our school for ideas on how things should work.
Mm-hmm.
The script ultimately stalled out, to the best of my knowledge, because it ate itself.
Yeah.
As time travel plots are wont to.
Right. Very clear dilemma here. An ancient guy who is a bummer is trying to resurrect himself and continue being a bummer. Stop that guy.
I think
guy.
Also, you know, undead and ghosts and spirits are kind of a great narrative vehicle to explore what happens when the past comes back quite literally.
Right.
To reestablish itself.
Right. And that's really what the thematic arc of the whole campaign is. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There is accumulated history in Tal'Dorei. A lot of it's not great.
Right. Somebody wants to harvest aspects of it to glorify or edify themselves, but ends up dredging up too much.
Right. And in a country where literally there is a woman who would not have been in charge under the existing rules, what does that mean to your characters?
A good story can excite us, yes. But the best ones, fiction or not, compel, inspire, or drive us toward the hope that we need for a better life. Remember, you don't need to know everything right now, but you do need to write. So make sure to like, review, and subscribe to us at Here Be Tigers. And until next time, take life by the tail.